Hey, it's Peter here with MyFSHD. Here we are on Sunday, February 12th. Hey, it's Super Bowl Sunday here in the U.S. And, none of my teams are playing. That's cool. This is the American Football Championship for those of you, professional football, outside the U.S. But I guess the Super Bowl's kind of gone global. Yeah, it's a cool halftime show. Rihanna, I guess, will be doing the halftime show. And always some fun ads. At least ads in the U.S. There's some interesting ads. Although you can see them all online ahead of time now. I'm not a big fan of that. You know what's coming. I don't know. I'll tell you right off the bat. I think my prediction. Sorry, Brad, Jenny, Yager. I'm going with, I'll tell you, we're rooting for the Chiefs, Kansas City Chiefs. Because our friends are Kansas City fans, we thought, it's the least we can do. We'll root for the Chiefs. Honestly, I think the Eagles, much to my dismay, I think they're going to win it. Now I'll go with a 31-20 with the Eagles. They just have looked too good this year. A little worried about Chiefs quarterback's health and maybe health after the Eagles defense gets them a few times. Actually, those of you who are longtime listeners know that I'm a much bigger fan of Arsenal and the English Premier League. And I haven't been mentioning them lately because I don't want to curse them. But this may be the last podcast where I can say that they're in first place. Although I got to tell you, oh, my God. You hate to complain. But, seriously, they've dropped 7 points in their last three games against some pretty beatable competition. I don't know. It's something like that. It's and losing to Everton, you just knew that was gonna happen. But at least Kate's dad is happy. It'd be nice for them to stay up, I guess. Yesterday's game. Geez, seriously. You should beat Brentford pretty easily anyway. They're having a good year, but still should beat them pretty solid. But still, to get a draw on a goal where two different offsides calls are missed. I guess what I would say is if you don't know what offsides, in American football, offsides is a totally different thing. But, of course, in soccer or worldwide football, offsides is something that you don't understand. And if you do understand it, it's pretty clear what you can and can't do. If you don't understand it, well, I think they'll hire you to run the VAR in the Premier League because they don't seem to understand it either. Not to sound like we're complaining, but at some point you're like, seriously, you have video review and you still miss obvious. It's not like these are opinions, right? It's like you draw a line on or off. Pretty easy, pretty straightforward. Okay. Anyway, I know I didn't want to complain, but we got Man City coming up midweek. And, they haven't played. The Villa game is going on right now. I'm not sure. I haven't caught the score on that one, but we'll see. Anyway. I don't know. I'm trying to lay low and not say too much. Don't want to jinx them. All right. So today we're going to be talking about this is mainly a science podcast today, talking about Avidity Bioscience and their upcoming clinical trial. And, it was supposed to be starting the end of 2022 and it was delayed a little bit and, but I don't think that's a problem. Not really too fussed about it, but I just want to go through what they're doing. And, my friend Rich, emailed me a file that Avidity put out, a presentation from, their investor room. It covers all of their technology. And I thought, instead of just giving, I'm going to give my opinion on what they put out and go through it with you, make sure you understand everything that's going on. Because the cool thing about the Avidity trial is it is the first FSHD specific therapeutic going to trial. Okay. Fulcrum's lesmapimod, that was a repurposed drug. These myostatin inhibition things that have been gone out, the ACE-83, that is not FSHD. That's just, trying to circumvent the problem in FSHD, to build muscle faster than you lose it. The myostatin inhibition, that is a non-specific technology for pretty much any, it's failed in every muscle disease, frankly. But its idea is to bail the boat out faster than it's sinking. Lesmapimod putatively is, at least in the lab, on Fulcrum's hand, shuts down DUX4. So you could make the case it's going to the root cause of the disease. The clinical trial did not show that it was doing that in the patients. at least that was my interpretation of the data. But again, that was a repurposed drug. And what that means is it was an FDA approved drug for actually 11 other indications. I'm pretty sure it was 11. And it had failed in those 11 and they were using it. So you know that it's probably pretty safe, right? Going to clinics. That's one thing. And you can save a lot of money taking a repurposed drug to clinic. You can save a lot of time. And we got no problems with any of those. No problem saving time, no problem saving money. But again, it was not an FSHD specifically designed therapeutic. And you know, that's in phase 3, and we're very hopeful of the Fulcrum phase 3 that it's going to show more benefit than it showed in the phase 2, which was sketchy at best. But that's going on. So if you're in that, more power to you. You're a good guinea pig. We're going to need people in the Avidity trial as well, and a bunch more trials coming. But Avidity, this is a biologic. I consider it a biologic. It's a small interfering RNA against the DUX4 mRNA. This is for FSHD. Building off of technology that has been around since 2011, when Alexander Believ first showed that antisense technology knocks down DUX4 in FSHD myocytes, muscle cells. 12 years later, finally, someone's going to clinic. And so we're going to get into what's going on with this technology. And go through. Now, I'll make sure everybody understands it. And again, it's always confusing. I tell people I don't know anything. Well, I can actually tell you, I'm not a consultant for Avidity, and I've never consulted for Avidity. I do understand the technology that's been publicly presented. I understand siRNAs. I understand FSHD pretty well. So I'm going to give you my take on it, but keep in mind, this is my opinion as a scientist in the field on their approach, their technology. And, you know, we're not for it or against it. Actually, I am for it. I will say I'm for it because in the sense that we want there to be a therapy. I want this to work. Honestly, if you said, do I want this to work or not? Hell yeah, I want it to work. Hope it works fantastic. I'm very hopeful. FSHD is a dominant gain of function disease. It is an ideal disease, except for being skeletal muscle, but otherwise than being skeletal muscle, it's an ideal disease for antisense based knockdown technology. And we've just been waiting for someone to go to clinic with something. Just get into clinic. There's about a dozen companies with different flavors of antisense technology. And all props to Avidity for being the first ones to get into clinic with their technology. And so that's why I'm giving them an A, okay? Because they're taking that. You know what? There's a big risk in going to clinic and being the first. You know, actually, Fulcrum, whether the trial works out or not, total props to Fulcrum for being for really going to clinic. We learned so much about running a clinical trial in the FSHD space, organizing clinical trial sites, assessing efficacy, you know, whether it's looking at DUX4 or looking at these reachable workspace or all these 20 other things that they're looking at, organizing patients, everything about it. There's so much, you know, even a failed trial, if it were to fail, would still teach us so much, you know, and it costs these companies an immense amount of money to take the dive. And you know what? Maybe it's easier to sit back and let someone else go first, and see what you learn from them. I don't know. Maybe I don't know what's going on, but nothing but props to Avidity Biosciences for getting their trial going and being the first in the space for antisense technology for FSHD. And we are very hopeful because I'll tell you what, in the lab, the underlying science is sound. It is. Okay. Antisense knocks down DUX4 many different ways in FSHD cells, in mice. You know, the questions are going to be around efficiency of delivery, efficacy, potential adverse effects, dosing, cost, you know, but the science is sound. Okay. Antisense and their siRNA version of antisense, it works. Okay. So can it now work in a person? That's what we're going to find out. You guys are going to be guinea pigs. And you know, everybody who takes part in a trial, especially this trial, we're going to say, and the Fulcrum trial, you know what, the original one, you guys are doing a tremendous service for the field. You're getting off the bench and you're getting in there, and it can't happen without y'all. We do all the science in the world, but at the end of the day, we need some of y'all to be guinea pigs and take some of you are going to get placebo too. And that's going to suck. Right. But that it has to be done, right? You got to do things, properly, blinded and with proper power. So, it's the only way the field's moving forward. So, you know, great appreciation for all of you, you people who are taking part in the clinical trials. Or have donated muscle biopsies to get us this far, actually. So many of you actually, I talk to my friend Dan Perez, founder of the FSHD Society, all the time. He feels like maybe some of all of this is coming too late for him. Well, you know what? You know, there's a guy who dedicated his life to advancing FSHD for the past 30 years. We wouldn't be here without him. You know what? And that it maybe some of this technology is going to be too late. Maybe not. But you know what? You need people to dive in the pool, right? People got to go all in and, in order to move forward. So at all stages of this and, but I'm really, really, really excited to, see what's going to happen with, the Avidity trial. So we're going to go through this investor deck that they had. It's available online. You can actually find it online. It's investorroom.com, Avidity Biosciences, January. I'm not giving you everything, but I'm sure if you search for that, you'd be able to find it. And it covers all of their technology and in multiple programs. So this is one thing about antisense technology. Antisense technology can be used for a couple of things, but I'm going to tell you briefly what we're talking, bring you up to speed, even though we've talked about this on many podcasts. I know a lot of people don't listen to all the podcasts or maybe don't pay attention. You know, when you're doing the laundry or jogging or working out and the podcast is going, maybe it's just, you're just waiting for the songs. I know. We got a good one today. I'll go back over it a little bit. We talk about ants. So remember, you know, DNA is your genes. Your genetic information is encoded in your genome. 3 billion bases of DNA. The DUX4 gene is really only 1,500 bases long. 1,500 DNA bases, CTAG long, is the DUX4 gene at the distal end of chromosome 4. And it is under a really strong negative regulation, a repression. It is kept off in healthy individuals or people without FSHD through an epigenetic repression mechanism that involves DNA methylation, which is a chemical modification on your DNA. And when you have a mutation in your genome that leads to FSHD, whether it's FSHD or 1 or FSHD2, you lose the epigenetic repression of the DUX4 gene, and you have a gain of function where the DUX4 gene is now on. And the DNA is in, or it's actually, should say it's in, has the capacity to be on. You've lost the repression that is now able to be turned on. And sporadically in skeletal muscles, for reasons we won't get into, it does get turned on. And then it gets transcribed. Transcription is the mechanism where DNA becomes copied into RNA. And the messenger RNA or the mRNA is properly processed. And you need to have a polyadenylation site put on this for stabilization and translation of your RNA into protein. This is what the permissive haplotype is. It's the second part of the mRNA. The second part of the DUX4 gene that is outside the array is your polyadenylation site that allows the transcribed mRNA to become a mature and ultimately translated, the process of making a protein, into the DUX4 protein, which then triggers a cascade of a whole lot of things that you really don't want to have going on in muscle cells, and you end up with FSHD pathology. So what antisense does, this is all sequence specific. Your DNA sequence becomes an RNA sequence, C-U-A-G. There's uracil instead of a T in the RNA. And it's a slightly different chemical backbone than DNA. And this RNA is targeted by molecules that have a corresponding sequence to the DUX4 mRNA. And it makes a double-stranded RNA, which is unusual. And your cell recognizes double-stranded RNA as something that's traditionally bad. So you're going to trigger a genome defense mechanism that recognizes double-strand RNA as typically invasive RNA, viral RNAs. Doesn't matter what the sequence is, but if double-strand RNA is bad in cells, because you don't normally make double-strand RNA, and it triggers what we call an RNA interference mechanism, where RNAs get processed into siRNA, small interfering RNAs. And then you go through and you have a mechanism to silence or eliminate all other RNAs in the cell that have the same sequence. Okay. And, you know, there's different ways, you know, not getting too much into it. There's a lot of different pathways, but this is a natural, normal cellular mechanism for genome defense and also for gene regulation. Actually, you use this yourself. Your cells use a flavors, little different pathways for developmental gene regulation. There's some microRNA pathways, some other kind of RNA pathways, all of which end up with the same result, silencing of the gene of interest that is of the double-strand RNA. And so for FSHD, the idea, since it's dominant gain of function, you are making the DUX4 mRNA when you don't want it. You want to eliminate it. It is ideal for antisense technology. All you need to do is introduce a corresponding sequence into the cells that will hybridize in a sequence-specific manner, right? Remember, C binds to G, you know, A binds to U and it's RNA, right? And you can, you know, if you make 18 of these in a row, you get a very specific sequence, very, very, you know, for the target gene, make this double-strand RNA and then have it eliminated by the cellular machinery. And if you can eliminate the DUX4 mRNA, you will not make any DUX4 protein, and you should presumably stop the initiation of any additional downstream pathology in FSHD. Now, the gene is still on. The DUX4 gene will still be making mRNA for DUX4 if you have FSHD. Just as it's made, it's going to be knocked down. And this gets to kind of where the dosing and such is gonna matter, because the gene's gonna be on the rest of your life still. But you know, so you're gonna have to still keep putting in these antisense. But all the antisense technology essentially is conceptually the same. You're targeting the mRNA to trigger this endogenous system of RNA interference. Okay, so now, as mentioned, there's about a dozen companies with different techniques. One thing about these companies is they typically are not FSHD companies. They're platform companies for technology, okay? And it just happens that FSHD is a spectacular disease for their technology to go after. The number of people that have it, around 1 million worldwide, you know, 40,000 to up to 100,000. I always see these numbers, 12,000 to 33,000 in the U.S. I'm telling you, that is way underreported. It's going to be around 100,000, maybe 120,000 people in the U.S. due to incomplete diagnostics, which is why the MyFSHD testing is so important. So, you know, from a business case, it makes sense, but from a technology case, it makes sense. There's two other diseases that these companies typically go after in the neuromuscular disease space. One is myotonic dystrophy, and we're going to start with Avidity's myotonic program. That is also a dominant gain-of-function disease where an RNA is produced that you need to get rid of. This kind of does a little different thing. Instead of making something that's toxic like DUX4, the myotonic dystrophy DMPK RNA actually sequesters important factors. It kind of binds them up into a ball of goo that falls out, aggregates in the nucleus and prevents proper gene regulation. But it's the same sort of fundamental idea. You need to get rid of that toxic RNA in order to cure treat a myotonic dystrophy. But you need to do that in muscle and neurons. And the other disease that these programs typically have is Duchenne muscular dystrophy, which is a little bit different. You're going to use the technology in here to target splicing sites and affect mRNA processing. In Duchenne muscular dystrophy, like most, pretty much all other neuromuscular diseases other than myotonic and FSHD, those are caused by mutations that affect the structural components of your muscles, okay? In Duchenne, you don't make dystrophin, and dystrophin is a key structural component and a key signaling component in muscle cells. And so you need to now fix your muscle cells by replacing, you know, putting some dystrophin back into the cells. So in FSHD, you're getting rid of DUX4. In myotonic, you're getting rid of the toxic RNA aggregates. In Duchenne, you're adding back dystrophin, but you're able to do it with a kind of similar technology where you use antisense to trigger RNA processing to make something. So I don't want to get too far into that because it's kind of not really what's going on, but these are the three programs that typically you'll see. And FSHD is often the third program. Myotonic is furthest along, and kind of myotonic Duchenne. Those are kind of side by side for the, and then FSHD is normally number three. And that seems to be the case with Avidity as well. But the good news about that is you learn so much from these other diseases. They learn about toxicity. They learn about dosing. They learn about efficacy. They learn about biodistribution because the tags that they're going to use for delivery and the chemistry of the antisense targets are going to be the same for these other diseases. And so they're going to learn so much. So FSHD, I think what it means is there's a greater chance of success of the FSHD clinical trials by going third with whatever the technology is. Yeah, you know, you want to go first because you want to go fast and you're going to hurry. But, you know, you're going to learn so much. Really what we want is successful clinical trials, okay? And so they've learned a lot and they're going to talk about that. So we're going to get in. So first off, Avidity's... and again, I have no financial interest whatsoever in Avidity. I don't. I just don't. So this is just my opinion on what's going on. So their platform, their siRNAs. These are small interfering RNAs. So this actually, first off, sets them apart from the other antisense companies. Things like Dyne, Arrowhead, Myricule. Those are single strand biologics that are going to go in and find the DUX4 RNA. Okay, the Avidity is a double strand. Synthetic RNA and a small interfering RNA. These are two strands of RNA hybridized together. And this is going to be delivered to your cells, delivered systemically in your body and with a tag that's going to let it get into the cells much better. One of the reasons antisense hasn't gone to clinic so far has been these things are really hard. Cells don't like to take up these kind of molecules. You can force them to do it in cell culture in the lab, and you can force it in mice too. Very inefficiently, but you know, it's really inefficient, but then it becomes a toxicity issue and a dosing issue. So you really need to kind of trick the body into taking these into muscle cells. And what Avidity has done is they're going to link these or conjugate them to an antibody, that a monoclonal antibody to the transferrin receptor, which is on many, many types of cells. But this antibody is going to bind the cellular receptor, this extracellular receptor, and it's going to lead to being internalization into the cells, and it's going to bring the siRNA into the cell. So you're going to essentially have an active sort of internalization, and this is going to be much more efficient for uptake, and should you allow you to decrease dosing and really increase efficacy. The original myotonic dystrophy trials that failed several years ago. Failed because even though the in vitro work in cell culture and the work in mice was really good, they really couldn't get the proper dosing in people in the therapy. They weren't able to get enough into people. This wasn't Avidity, but they weren't the company that was doing it wasn't able to get enough of their antisense into patients. And so Avidity is addressing this issue by using something called an antibody oligoconjugate. Okay, and they're gonna really address the uptake, the delivery and uptake in their systems. Okay, so they got three trials going, right? They have the Marina is trial, which is a phase 1/2 with AOC 1001 for myotonic dystrophy, and we're gonna cover a little bit of that because they learn a lot from that. FSHD is the AOC 1020. And this is, I guess you got to give them all a name. This is the Fortitude trial. It's also a phase 1/2. And then for DMD, they have the Explore 44. And the 44 is going to probably be for exon 44. The Fortitude trial is the FSHD trial. I don't know if it stands for anything. It's a trademark. Phase 1/2 means that this is going to be a dosing and tolerability study. But it's 1/2 because they're going to use FSHD patients. So this is not going to be properly powered clinical trial to really address efficacy, but they're going to get some information about efficacy because if it's a straight phase 1 only uses healthy individuals, Phase two, you get into people with the disease. Phase one, two, you know, you're doing dosing and tolerability in people with the disease. And because really the first question and probably the most important question in any of this antisense technology is, what is a dose that is going to provide some sort of efficacy? Okay. And so that's what you got. You don't want to run a huge phase two or phase three trial. You shouldn't. You can't until you know what dose to use. And so that's really what this is going to be getting at. They're going to be looking at, you know, how much of a dose do they need to put in order to see some efficacy. So they got a bunch of data already from their Marina trial. All right. So have the, it says Marina data from Q4 2022 preliminary assessment. And this is, it looks like it's updated as of mid-December. So, you know, they may have some more data. But just wanted to, again, this is the myotonic dystrophy trial, right? So this has been the same, you know, it's the same antibody, the same conjugate, different short hairpin RNA. It's targeting the DMPK mRNA. And FSHD will be targeting the DUX4 mRNA. But, you know, generally, you know, you think uptake in neuromuscular disease is likely to be very similar. Biodistribution should be similar. And you'd imagine many of the adverse events, you know, toxicity, so to speak, would be similar. Now, maybe it's something we'll talk about later. The sequence of the siRNA can actually have its own effects, you know, different from the, you know, so there could be, you know, specific adverse events or specific tox with a different sequence. But, you know, you only know till you get there. All right. So the first thing they're going to say is, you know, they said it was generally well tolerated. Okay. So generally it's favorable safety and tolerability. Okay. You know, they said there's on the 1 mg/kg, there was 1 out of 6 people had reported an adverse event. Okay. 3 out of 9 in the 2 mg/kg and 10 out of 13. A total of 14 out of 27 individuals reported an adverse event. And so what do these adverse events actually mean? It sounds horrible, right? It's like, well, actually, you know, that's related to the related to study drug. Okay. These are just moderate or mild adverse events. These can be infusion related reactions, reductions in hemoglobin, elevations and ASTs or ALTs, but no change though in your bilirubin, so going fine. And there were no thrombocytopenia and no renal impairment reported. These are things that have been reported in the past in gene therapy and some other therapies. So, you know, generally pretty mild. Overall, out of 28 participants, there were only 2 serious adverse events. And these were in the 4 mg/kg cohort. And it actually resulted in the FDA putting in a partial clinical hold. Okay. And, so that was, you know, only one of those actually was actually related to the drug. The other one was considered an unrelated serious adverse event. And so, you know, actually, overall, I think that that's a correct interpretation. Generally, favorable safety and tolerability. Okay, but, you know, does it work? Okay, so the thing you're going to do, right, you're going to deliver, you know, you got to systemically deliver this. You need to reduce the DMPK mRNA. Now, the DMPK mRNA, that's the gene name, DMPK. It has this triplet repeat expansion in myotonic dystrophy that leads to it basically just forming this aggregate of goo RNA in the nucleus that sequesters a lot of regulatory factors that you need for proper gene expression. So basically what happens in myotonic dystrophy is the genetic mutation results in kind of a disruption of gene regulation in muscles and nerves due to splicing dysregulation. Okay, and what's splicing? Well, you have introns and exons in genes. The exons encode the information for the protein. And you need to put all these exons together to make the mRNA and get rid of the introns, which are the intervening sequences in the gene. Okay. When this is disrupted, you actually don't make the right recipe. It's not that, you know, your mRNA is actually contains the wrong information, often leads to non-functional or no protein being made. And so if you screw up splicing, you can actually disrupt gene regulation of a large number of genes. And that's what's going on in myotonic dystrophy, is that a genetic mutation in one gene leads to a reduction in splicing factors, leads to a generalized disruption of splicing and loss of function, okay? And you get myotonia and all these different things. So what they're going to look at then is in muscle, they're going to see, do you get improvement in splicing? And then do you get some functional benefit, okay? And so they're going to look at the different doses. They're going to look at the 1, 2, and 4 mg/kg doses. At least that's what's reported here. I believe they just haven't reported anything for the 8 mg/kg yet. That was the last dose that was started. And there's no data on that. So the data in this report that I'm looking at only has 1, 2, and 4 mg/kg. And so what they're going to say is, so they actually found that in each of the groups, they actually did show reduction of DMPK. Okay, so this is the target. And this is actually really important, right? The target of the siRNA is the DMPK mRNA. So they're going to look directly at the target. And in order to do that, they're going to have to take a muscle biopsy. Okay, and so they find, this tells you the drug is working. This is in contrast to, say, for example, the losmapimod trial, where when they looked at whether the DUX4 gene was producing, first off, they never looked if the DUX4 gene was off or on, and they looked downstream targets of DUX4 and they found no significant change. Okay, here, at least with this antisense technology to DMPK, they're looking at the direct target of the antisense, and they show that in the 1 mg and the 2 mg/kg, they do get, within 6 weeks after two doses, right, single dose of the 1 mg/kg and two doses of 2 mg/kg, they do get a reduction of DMPK. Okay. So now what happened? Now they're going to look at and say, does the dose actually do what it's supposed to do, right? And so they're going to now look at splicing and say, they know the target's genes where the splicing is disrupted. Okay. And they're going to look at several of these genes together and say, has their normal splicing been restored? Okay. And you would predict it would, right? Although you don't know. And what they show is that, yes, actually, to some degree, a significant degree, the splicing is restored in a 22 gene panel, right? So they know that there's these number of genes that are misspliced and therefore not properly regulated in myotonic dystrophy. When they add their antisense, they get rid of they reduce the DMPK mRNA. That should reduce the aggregates that are in the cells. That should release the splicing factors to perform their normal function. You should restore normal splicing in the cells. And what they find is that there is a 16% restoration of splicing, okay, in this 22 gene panel. Okay, not great, but it's something. It actually, two things. This is phase 1/2. What they're showing is they have a dose that does actually do what it's supposed to do. It reduces DMPK mRNA and starts to restore splicing. Okay, well now do you get any benefit? Okay. They looked at an individual patient panel, and they found that, again, not everybody had a splicing improvement, but in general, overall, people had a splicing improvement. Not everybody. Again, you get some variability. What about participants? Okay. So now we're gonna go through and look at myotonia. And what they find is that the early responders from their 1 mg/kg actually do show improvement within weeks after their first dose. Now, this myotonia is more of a nerve thing. You have a grip that you can't release. It's very different than what you see in FSHD. In fact, it would be kind of a distinguishing feature. But what they find is that they are starting to restore some function, okay, with this. And, okay, again, these are phase 1/2 trial. It is not properly powered to show really efficacy, but what they're really showing is that their molecule that they created, this antibody oligoconjugate to an siRNA against a target mRNA, does get into cells. It does in a person. It does reduce the target. It does restore some of the disrupted function in the cell, and you do get some clinical benefit from it. Okay, you know, quite honestly, I think that this bodes well for saying that in the FSHD trial, which hasn't started yet, that you should have similar type of function. Right now, the question is, right, would a 16% reduction, you know, what would this percent reduction in DUX4 have clinical benefit? Yeah, that's what we're going to find out. But what I get out of this is it says, you know, they're going to go to the FSHD trial. Things are looking up, right? It's looking up enough that they're willing to start the trial. Okay, so let's go through the, so I'm going to take a short break real quick, and then we're going to come back and we're going to go through the, what's going on with Avidity with their FSHD specific program. Okay, so we'll get that in a sec. All right, had to get some Chumbawamba in here, get some energy as we're heading into the FSHD portion. And I got to tell you, I just got an email from my man Scott, who is a great, you know, he's a longtime listener with his mom Jan. He's over in Thailand right now. And Scott says, hey, can you do a podcast on the Avidity trial? Because I guess there's something going on Zoom and then sometime, I don't know. And he's not going to be able to access it because he's over in Thailand for some reason. I don't know. And talk about, you know, this is real-time responsiveness to the desires of the FSHD community. You know, Rich sent me the presentation. Scott wants to hear what's going on. So here we go, man. Here we go. We're going to talk about the Avidity FSHD port. Remember, that what I talked about previously was the myotonic dystrophy Marinid trial, which is similar technology. Well, same technology, different sequence, different target gene. Yeah, different disease. Okay. And now that we're pumped up, man. And again, you know, one thing to remember, it doesn't matter. Well, it does matter. You know, we want the trial to be successful. We're going to learn something from this trial no matter what. More trials are coming. More antisense trials are coming. CRISPR's coming. I'm telling you, CRISPR's coming. Other small molecules are coming. There's a whole lot of stuff coming. But you know what? If I had my druthers, I'd be happy if this trial success. You know, if I've been, you know, but again, this is a phase 1-2 trial. So it's really about safety and dosing and tolerability. Okay, so not really designed for efficacy, but they're going to look. They're going to look at a few things. They'll get some ideas, just like they did with the Marinid trial. All right, so let's go. SiRNA, the idea of this trial will be to knock down the DUX4 mRNA and to eliminate DUX4 from your muscles. If you eliminate DUX4, what's going to happen is you're going to presumably stop the pathogenic initiation of new pathogenic cascades in your muscles, and hopefully will save muscle health on the muscles you have. Probably the more muscle you have, the more chance you're going to have to regenerate healthy muscle. You know, but at least this should stop the destruction. Yeah, we got other ideas on how to build back muscle. This will probably have different results for different people. But that's the idea. Now, this is going to be a little bit different than myotonic in the sense that, you know, while myotonic dystrophy and FSHD are both dominant gain of function diseases, and they both produce an mRNA that you want to get rid of, the reason you're getting rid of the myotonic mRNA is to release splicing factors so that you can restore an activity that is missing from the muscles. I mean, alternatively, you could just add back those splicing factors. There's kind of gene therapy technology being proposed to do that. But it really is much more similar mechanistically to the other muscular dystrophies like Duchenne and limb-girdle that are defects in components of the muscle, right? You need to build back, you need to add something back. So in myotonic, you're going to add something back to the muscle by getting rid of the thing that's taking them away. Okay. In FSHD, you don't really need to add anything back at all. You just got to get rid of DUX4. Get rid of the DUX4 mRNA, shut down the DUX4 gene, get rid of the DUX4 protein one way or another. That's all you got to do. Okay, so you're not adding anything back. Now, this actually is going to mean the bar is a little bit different in FSHD, okay? Because if you're at zero, like you are in kind of essentially at zero in Duchenne muscular dystrophy or myotonic, and you start adding, you know, you need to add something back. If you add back 10%, actually you're jumping through hoops. You've actually done something because, you know, you're able to restore some normal function by adding back a little bit. Okay, so knocking down a little bit of the DMPK mRNA releases some of the splicing factors that are needed, which then creates and restores some of the normal function of the proteins and genes that are misregulated, and you get back actually some therapeutic benefit. Okay. In FSHD, would decreasing a little bit of DUX4 actually do anything for you? Not actually clear, because it's a matter of how is the DUX4 regulated. Now we think about, when we talk about having how much DUX4 do you have in cells that lead to pathology, the way I believe it works, and I think the data backs up, is it is the number of cells expressing 100% of DUX4 that is the difference between somebody that is severe, mild, or asymptomatic, okay? you have, and we have seen this by counting cells that express DUX4, by dilution experiments to determine the number of cells that express DUX4 and such, okay? So your cells, your muscle cells, most of them are not expressing DUX4, okay? Even if you're, you know, if you're FSHD, most of, you know, it has, they have the capacity to express DUX4. And the DUX4 gene is either on 100% or off 100% in a, on a cell-by-cell basis. And so it's the, this is kind of, you know, this is different. In Duchenne muscular dystrophy, none of your cells are expressing dystrophin, okay? If you add back a little bit and it's in situ, then, you know, all of your cells are expressing, you know, 10% of dystrophin, okay? So that's a different thing. In FSHD, can you actually, you know, it's not the levels of DUX4 that are actually so important. It's the number of cells that are expressing a high level of DUX4 that's important. So if you were to decrease DUX4 by 10% in all the cells that are expressing DUX4, the question is, will that actually have therapeutic benefit? We don't know the answer to that, right? Now, if you could decrease the number of cells, so with the data that everyone refers to, it's actually data from our lab that Takeko did, our 2015 paper that shows that, you know, it is the number of cells expressing DUX4 that is what's important, okay? And the number of cells is different between asymptomatic and symptomatic people within families. But this is actually what matters, okay? And so on one hand, you can say, yeah, you know, less DUX4 is better. I believe that to be true. But we don't really know how much, you know, if you still, you know, if you, let's say you currently have 10% of your cells expressing DUX4, okay? If you still had those 10% of cells expressing DUX4, but they were only expressing 80% of DUX4 or 50% of DUX4, is that going to be benefit? We'd actually don't know, right? Now, what the data shows in the mouse work and the lab work shows that if you change the number of cells expressing DUX4, and so any cell that's expressing DUX4 is at 100%, but instead of having 1% or 10% of the cells expressing DUX4, you have 1% of the cells expressing DUX4, we know that is the difference between being severe, moderate, or asymptomatic. Right? The number of cells expressing DUX4 is what matters. Okay. So now you can't actually, well, some people are trying, developing technology, but this technology is going to target all of your muscle cells. And I think the goal is to get DUX4 down to zero or as close to zero in all of your cells, right? Whether they're expressing, you know, and that I think is the goal. But what the data from the Marinette trial showed is that, you know, at their highest dose, they only restored a little bit. So the question is, that's the big question, okay? Are you going to reduce DUX4? I bet, I'm willing to bet that they will reduce DUX4 based on the other data I've seen and everything in their package here. But will it be enough to provide therapeutic benefit? And if it's not, can they get a dose high enough to give you therapeutic benefit? And we just don't know. That's the whole point of the trial. And I hope the answer is yes. And so far, everything that's presented suggests the answer could be yes. Okay. So again, the therapeutic approach, they're going to go through their preclinical data and they're showing their preclinical data and they use patient-derived myoblasts. They differentiate them into myotubes and they look at the DUX4 signature and they show that in a dose-dependent manner, the DUX4 signature goes away in vitro, just like it did in the Fulcrum trial, just like it has done since 2011 when Alexander Believ first showed that you could do this. So the antisense works, and we knew it was going to work, but it's good. They show it works, and it's pretty effective. Actually, it's got a really great IC50, 0.127 nanomolar. So it's a pretty potent drug that they got here, pretty potent antisense. So what do they mean by DUX4 signature? So this is the same thing that was done in the Fulcrum phase 2b trial. Remember, DUX4 protein is a transcription factor. Its function is to turn on a developmental embryonic program early, you know, when you were 4 cells old, and drive that program. So genes that are required for that get turned on. In FSHD, those same genes get turned on in your muscles, and it's bad. You don't want those. You're not an embryo anymore. You got fully differentiated muscles. They're driving an embryonic gene program, and that's bad, and that leads to pathology. But we know what those genes are by fantastic work out of The Seattle Wellstone, led by Stephen Tapscott, Leo Wang, and the gang, Jeff Statlin, Robbie Twill, those guys, they have some really fantastic work, really identifying the Ducks 4 signature. Okay, so these are the genes that are regulated by Ducks 4. Okay, and why are you looking at these? I actually, my lab looks at Ducks 4 directly plus the signature genes, because signature genes are regulated by multiple factors in cells. But Ducks 4 mRNA itself is actually really hard to do. Not in cell culture, it's not though. No, just no one does it. It's a different approach. Takeko developed a great assay for doing it. People just don't do it. Companies hate to do it. Because they like to multiplex everything. What that means is they like to assay a number of genes all at the same time. It's cheaper and it's faster. You just can't do Ducks 4 as a multiplex. So you would have to, maybe it's double the work, I don't know. But to me, they'd be looking at the target. So they're not looking at their actual target here. They're looking at target genes, okay? But this is what you see typically in the FSHD field. Okay, so the preclinical work in myoblast looks good. Then they go to a mouse model. Well, thank God there's a mouse model. You know why there's a mouse model? There's a mouse model because Chris Carino, Jennifer Burgess funded our lab, and Takeko created the FlexDux4 mouse model. And then we put it in Jackson Labs. We made it freely available to everybody, every company, everyone in the world can use it. Okay. That's why you got to make tools. That's why funding tools funds everybody. And when I say making tools available to the field, that means that you're helping the competition. Yeah, on one level, from a business standpoint, making our tools available helps the competition. But from a member of the FSHD worldwide community, it drives therapeutic development faster and better. And that's why you do it. And to me, it's unconscionable to restrict the use of tools. And I don't understand why anybody doesn't would want to do that, Frank. I do understand why, but that's because there are a lot of horrible people out there. But so Avidity, without our help, we put this in a publicly available repository so that anybody in the world can get our mouse model and do the work themselves. They don't need to come to us. They don't need to show us their data. They don't need to rely on us to do our technique. They can do it with who they want on their own, completely independently. So they use the mouse model, and what are they going to show? They're going to do a single IV injection of their siRNA, their antibody oligo-conjugated siRNA, single IV injection in the mouse, and 56 days later, they are still seeing the Ducks 4 gene signature in mice is down. Down, looks like it's down like 80%, okay? Really great, you know, and so on their 6 mg per kg dose, so they get dose-dependent reduction in the Ducks 4 signature. Their 2 mg per kg is down about 60%. Right, you've knocked it down. So you only have 40% of the signature left. So it's working really well in Ducks 4 mouse model, in IV, in muscles, in vivo. That's looking at gene expression. One of the great things about our mouse model is you can do treadmill running and show that these mice don't run very well, just like you might not run very well. The muscles are weaker, just like your muscles are weaker. And what they find is that when they actually look at the treadmill running, they're able to restore practically normal treadmill running with their 2 mg per kg and their 8 mg per kg. They're actually, instead of restoring it, they're actually preventing the loss of running. So they're preventing the loss of destruction. And so this is really good news. So shows that it works in vivo. The muscles actually don't get weaker. And so again, this is what they're doing here. They're not curing a mouse with FSHD. They're adding their AOC and then inducing FSHD in the mouse model. And what they show is that when they do that, FSHD doesn't appear, okay? So it's not actually, so they're not reversing the phenotype, but this is actually, it doesn't matter. For the mouse model, this is what you want to do. It's a different question on whether or not you can reverse the phenotype. If you want to check, does your drug work? This is what you want to do. So they do this exactly how I would have done it. They do it right. Not that they care, but they do it right. And they do show. They show that they prevent the loss of treadmill run, loss of function. They prevent the loss of strength, and they prevent Ducks 4 genes from being activated. So all good. So that's how the mouse model should be used. Okay. Fantastic. Now they're going to go into non-human primates. You know, you're a human primate, non-human primates. These are not going to be FSHD models because there's no such thing. The pig model's not available. I'm sure they would have done the pig model if they had the choice, but it's not available yet. We're moving, and it's moving slower than it needs to because, well, people are less helpful than they need to be. But we're going to get it. So the next trial's coming. Maybe it'll have some big work. But, you know, honestly, you don't have to do it. You're just going to make the jump from mouse to people. But they've already done that for their Marina trial, and they've already done it in Duchenne. So they already have some data, and they already have a good idea. So you know what? I'm cool with it. So now they're going to go to non-human primate. They're just going to look at stability of this in serum and in plasma, and they find that it's, you know, it's pretty much pretty stable. They're going to look at tissue distribution, and they basically and again, because they're going to get to dosing, they don't want to have to dose so much. So they're looking at 12 weeks after dosing, and you still get a pretty decent tissue concentration. Yeah, after 1 week, it's there. Pretty high. And then, you know, 4 weeks, you know, they have 10%. And then 8 weeks still running. Yeah, by 12 weeks is kind of depending on the dose. It's a log scale. Basically, it says that, you know, well, it supports you're not going to have to dose too often, right? Every week, that would be a pretty tough regimen. Every 4 weeks, we'll see. But that's the whole point of this trial. They're going to find out what kind of dosing, you know, what is the dose amount and what is the dosing regimen you're going to need. I'm looking at this in 12 weeks, boy, it's pretty low. At the single 1 mg/kg dose. Now the 9 mg/kg dose, you're still at 10, it's not so bad. I don't know. You know, it's going to get down to how much you can tolerate. So anyway, I would agree though that it potentially supports infrequent dosing regimen. How often do you have, because you know what, this is going to be delivered to you intravenously. Okay. This is not going to be a pill, in case you're wondering. You know, the losmapimod trial, they take 2 pills in the morning, 2 pills in the evening, rest of your life. That's the idea. This is going to be, you're going to have to go to the clinic and get an IV injection. Okay. And at least that's my understanding. And so the more you have to go, it's going to increase costs and increase pain in the ass. I know you guys will do it if it cures you and it fixes you, but, the less frequent, the better. Better cost, the better. And so they're you know, they're shortening. It looks reasonable. You know, ideally you'd like to get the further out, the better. I guess it comes down to how much of a dose you need. Because the problem is going to be, again, different from myotonic. So think about myotonic. Myotonic, you're knocking down an mRNA, the DMPK mRNA, which is going to release splicing factors and it's going to add back something you need. Okay, so now you're kind of fixing the boat. You're fixing the hole, okay? In FSHD, so let's say over time, that gets less and less efficient. So let's say you add back, you know, 20% when you first get the dose, and 3 months later, you're adding back 5%. You're still adding back. And you haven't lost any of the benefit of having the functional proteins that are there, right? So myotonic, same thing for Duchenne, same thing for limb-girdle, you know, If efficacy decreases over time, it's not that big of a deal. Okay, yeah, you'd like to keep it as high as you can, but it's not that big of a deal because you're adding back something you need, and a little bit of something is way better than nothing. In FSHD, you've got to get rid of something that's really bad. So the question would be, if you lose efficacy over time, do you lose the benefit? So let's say you shut down DUX4 that first week. Okay, now your muscles are not making any more DUX4. Well, 3 weeks later, or 3 months later, sorry, let's say 3 months later, what if you're starting to express DUX4? Have you lost all the benefit of having it shut down? You know, I mean, could you have a toxin, right? This is something that now it's driving something, you know, the ball starts rolling downhill again. The whole idea, let's knock down DUX4 so you shut down the initiation of pathology. If it starts up again, have you lost all the benefit? You know, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but I think it would be worse in FSHD than in all these other muscular dystrophies where you're adding something back, because you got to get rid of something that's bad in FSHD. It's bad for a different reason. It itself is bad. Okay. And so, but this, you know, this is what I mean. Devil's in the details. Works great in the lab. This is why we got to do these clinical trials. And this is why dosing, stability, the long-term efficacy is good, but they got some really good results from the non-human primate. And I'm not being negative at all, by the way. I just want to explain any other the way things are. Okay. My concerns about antisense as a scientist. Okay. So great data from toxicology studies though, in non-human primates. That what it says specifically here on slide 59, no dose limiting toxicity observed in non-human primates at the highest dose tested. right? Because if dosing is going to be the issue, this says, you know, they haven't hit an upper limit yet on how much they can put in. It'll affect costs and it'll affect stability, you know, these things. But it sounds like they can go higher. They can go higher than what they're trying. So if it's not enough, the project's not dead. No observed platelet or renal toxicity. These are the number one problems with the technology in the past, not having those problems. So that's great. Says their platform's really good. No treatment-related histopathological toxicity observed in non-human primates. No changes observed in safety pharmacological parameters in cardiac, respiratory, and neurological systems. Right, no adverse events were identified at the highest doses tested in both non-human primates and the murine models, and the safety results in non-human primates similar to mouse. So it says, the tox, this is as good as you can get, as far as I can tell. I don't see any. There's no red flags here on this on the primate tox studies. Now there were some red flags in the myotonic clinical trial that we talked about. There were some adverse events in people. You're a primate. But you're a little bit, still a little bit different than a non-human primate, you're a little bit different than a mouse, a little bit different than a pig. Okay. But I'd say, you know, everything here says go to clinic, right? Go to clinic. We got to get some data. And again, props to Avidity for going to clinic. I think the tox studies, as far as I can tell, my outsider's opinion looks good. Okay. So now the Fortitude Phase 1-2 clinical trial to evaluate AOC-1020 in adults with FSHD tells you the first thing right there. Under 18, you're not eligible for the trial, okay? Key information is going to be randomized, double-blinded, placebo-controlled, okay? Very important. This is the right way to do the trial. What this means is when you go to your doc, if you get in here, you say, hey, doc, give me the good stuff. They don't know if they're giving you the good stuff. They don't know what they got. They don't know if it's placebo. They don't know. It's a 2-to-1 trial, meaning for every 2 people on the drug, there's one person that's getting placebo. Okay. In their first step, A1 study, there's 12 people. Okay. That means 8 people are on the drug, 4 people on placebo. In the part B, 24 people. That means that 16 people are on the drug and 8 people are on placebo. Okay. So that's just how it's going to be. There's going to be multiple doses, so it's placebo controlled and it's randomized. Okay, there's just no, so, you know, some of you aren't going to get the drug if you're in the trial, but you know what? There's going to be an open label extension at the end. So everybody who's in the trial has the opportunity to be guaranteed to be on the real deal. This is important for follow-up studies, long-term studies for the company, but also it tells you that even, you know, if you are volunteering to be one of the guinea pigs in this trial, and more power to you if you are, you're doing a huge service to the field, service to everybody in the field by being in the trial. You are guaranteed to get the drug at the end. Okay. You're guaranteed to get the drug at the end. Okay. Some other information, it looks like it's 18 to 65. So if you're over 65, you're screwed. I don't understand why that, I understand that they're going to say if you're over 65, you have more chance to be in underlying conditions, but you know what? I know a bunch of people in their 50s with underlying conditions. Hell, I'm one of them, you know, and I know a bunch of people that are in their 70s that are doing just fine. So it's kind of arbitrary to me. It strikes me as your health should be better, but whatever. It seems to be what the field does. They're going to do ages 18 to 65. It's up to 12 months study. And here's the important fact. Biopsies in all core cohorts. Okay. Everybody's going to have to give a muscle biopsy before being on the drug and then after being on the drug. Okay. You know what? The truth of the matter is, this is what you got to do. This is where the field is right now. The only way that they will be able to assess their DUX4 signature is by looking in muscle biopsies. Okay. The target of the drug is DUX4, the DUX4 mRNA. I hope they're going to look at DUX4. Although I got to admit, it is very hard to identify DUX4 mRNA in muscle biopsies. But the gene signatures are easier to find. Honestly, they're going to look to see if they're knocking down their target. This is what you got to do. Okay. It sucks, but you got to do it. Make sure, now in the Fulcrum trial, they said there was one biopsy, but they took 4 plugs. So one hole, it's a needle biopsy, and then they take 4 plugs. Not sure what they're doing here. Some people considered that 4 biopsies. Some patients were very upset. They said, oh, that's 4 biopsies, and then 4 afterwards, that's 8 biopsies. Technically, it's 1 biopsy. They just put the plug in, they took 4 cores. Not sure what they're doing here. You might want to ask them on what they're doing. But the key is you need to do it. This is why it is amazing that you're participating in a clinical trial, because these biopsies are tough. We don't have a circulating biomarker that is DUX4 responsive yet. We don't have it. MRI, the data is coming in now still as to how informative MRI is going to be. Non-invasive, great. And I think MRI has a lot of promise. That's why I want to do MRI in the pigs. But we don't have any, you know, you don't want to do this and not get the information. They need to do this. And so you are really taking it for the team to do this. And it's important. It's just incredibly important. Okay. The primary objectives are safety and tolerability of ascending doses of AOC in patients with FSHD, and then to look at the pharmacokinetics, right? They're gonna answer these questions about dosing, stability, how long it lands in tissue, and these things. The key objective is pharmacodynamics, measures of clinical activity. They are going to still check muscle strength, function, and composition, patient-reported outcomes. So even though those are not what it's really about, they're still going to check, right? Just like the Marina trial, they will find out and they'll get an idea. Are you getting stronger or are you not getting weaker? What does your MRI look like? I'm assuming by muscle composition, I shouldn't say I assume. I don't know if it's MRI or not. I'm guessing it's MRI, but it could just be histology on your biopsies. It could be histology. I mean, that's another thing you should ask. Is it MRI? I hope to do MRI. I'd love to see that. So the study design is right here. They're going to do 1 mg/kg and 2 mg/kg in their A1 study. Their B1 study is 4 mg/kg, B2, 8 mg/kg. And then they're going to expand it into a dose yet to be determined with 36 people. Again, all of these are placebo-controlled, 2-to-1, and they're multiple dosing, multiple doses. Okay, they're going to be doing this through the clinical trial research network, you know, that's been set up across around the world, actually. And so, you know, the infrastructure is in place. They've been sponsoring it, and the trial is going to get going. I got to tell you, you know, again, FSHD is ideal for antisense technology, if it'll ever work. It's ideal for CRISPR. It's ideal for a number of things. But, you know, this has been around for so long. I am actually very excited that Avidity is diving in and taking this to trial. And they're going to be the first ones with an FSHD-specific drug going to trial, designed specifically for FSHD. And, you know, nothing but props to Avidity for doing this. Again, I got no connection to them. I'm glad you guys used our mouse model. I'm sorry our pig model is not available yet. And you know, I wish you guys the best, absolute the best on this going forward and getting some good results. Hopefully we'll have good news. How long is this going to take? Well, you know, it's they said what the results are going to be. Let's see, where does it see? It says result preliminary assessment in approximately half of the participants in 1H 2024. Okay, so the first half of 2024, they'll have the assessment of about half of the participants. Okay, and so that's kind of the time frame. So tune in next year, before June, we should get some ideas on whether it's working. All right, so what could go wrong, or what other things might you want to ask? Well, you know, briefly, I mentioned at the beginning that there could be some sequence-specific differences. Well, we know that very specific DNA sequences can trigger a toll-like receptor immune response in people, or primates. And so, you know, even though the technology is working and not really causing adverse events in myotonic, the antisense, the siRNA for DUX4, is a different sequence. And, you know, it could potentially trigger a response, and we're not going to know until it's in the human. So there's a potential, that's one place it could, you know, could be a difference, or maybe a surprise that we're not, that could come up. What do you need to know, though? So this is just one of, you know, a number of trials coming up. The preclinical data appears to show that these siRNAs, these AOC siRNAs, are pretty stable in serum and pretty stable in tissue over a pretty good long length of time. So what happens if you decide you want to go into a different trial? Well, in order to, if you are in trial X and you want to go into trial Y, you need to, standard in the field, grow through five half-lives of the therapeutic before you're eligible to get into another trial. And so, you know, while it's great from a therapeutic perspective, if these things last for a long time in your body, if you want to get it out of your body for whatever reason, you want it to have a shorter half-life. So, you know, if you decide, hey, there's another trial I want to get into, or hey, this isn't working for me, it could potentially be, well, it could potentially be several years before you'd be eligible to get into another trial. In addition to the fact that potentially trials aren't going to want people that have been in another trial because it's a confounding factor. You know, right now, you know, these are the, this is the beginning. Actually, there's only, there's so few people that are going to be, was an N of 72, I believe is what they said, that are going to be in this trial. You know, so it only 72 of you have anything to be concerned about. But it's just something, you know, just want to put that out there is, you know, sometimes it's a question that gets asked, and maybe that's a question you can ask, ask the Avidity people, when you're talking to them about getting into the trial, what's the half-life, what's the expected half-life, of the molecule. So that, you know, just so you have your eyes open when you're going in, to the trial or thinking about it anyway. So again, you know, I'm, fingers crossed, you know, we're hopeful that they get, data that continues to point in the right direction. We're hoping once this gets into people, that, you know, you see the escalating doses, show increased efficacy. You hope that you don't have any adverse, events, and, hopefully the, preliminary assessment of this, again, underpowered for efficacy study, shows indications of benefit, either in the functional test, the muscle histology, or, and, or, in the looking at the DUX4 target genes. So, you know, again, we're, it's not going to, it's not enough people in the trial to say, yes, this is working or not working, but they'll have a indication on whether or not, to continue on. And, you know, yeah, I don't know. We're hopeful. Finally, an antisense is going. Finally, an FSHD specific drug is going to trial. So I don't know. And I give them an A, A for effort. Yeah, I was never great at English. It's like wonderful Toledo Public Schools. Anyway, you know what? Super Bowl is about to start. Again, you know, I don't know. I feel that the Eagles are the better team, but, you know, Kansas City tends to pull these things out. And our friend, you know, our friend Jagger's rooting for the Chiefs, so we're going to be rooting for the Chiefs. And tell you what, Jagger, bring us on home, man. Catch you all later. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the MyFSHD podcast, where we share with you the latest news and information on FSHD as we strive for a cure. Do you have a question for Peter? He'd love to hear from you. You can reach him at peterjones@med.unr.edu. Thank you for listening, and join us again next time for more news and information.